Hi, I'm Erica Suchsdorf, and I'm talking with Deborah Disman in her studio in Santa Monica. She's an artist who's very focused on texture and bookmaking, and I will let our conversation say the rest. But I want to say that you asked me a question, or no, we talked about raw. Because I have taken video of you in the past under the heading of raw footage and posted it on YouTube. And this is my first foray into straight audio using voice memo. And I'm using voice memo because I think the sound is so good. So we'll see. And then you had a response to raw. You liked the word raw. What was it about? What is it about raw that is good for you?
The evocation, of course, you think about edible. I think about a potato that I'm cutting, that I'm preparing. I cut into it, and it's a raw potato, which sounds like sort of a weird image, but I don't think the word raw is used very much in these times. Everything is so editable and digitized and worked through that I don't even think we use the word that much. So, you know, I was thrilled. It's a testament to your literacy and your articulateness, I think, to use that word, which I'm assuming probably just bubbled up from your unconsciousness. I even see colors. They're not bright colors. They're kind of like earthy colors that that come into my mind with that word. And I just love putting it with the word footage. Perhaps they're often put together in that world, which I'm not a part of, but also just the sounds of it when you say raw. I don't know what it is. But it's very sort of physical to me.
That's great. It's tactile.
Tactile.
Right?
Yeah, in sort of a full-bodied way somehow.
In a full-bodied way.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing that a sound would have that effect?
Yes.
It's so great.
I mean, it's how it is to me. Now, someone else might see raw as something else.
Raw just, for me, it really feels untouched. Mm-hmm. This is it.
Right.
You know, this has not been polished. It's not been contained.
Filtered.
It's not been filtered.
Right.
It's not been controlled.
Right.
No, this is it. Mm-hmm. This is pure.
It makes it scary to some.
Yeah.
That's how we are as children. It's all raw, right?
Right. It's not contained.
Right.
It's not controlled. This is what happened organically.
Right. Yeah, raw. It's very organic. I guess that's the connection.
Yeah. But I'm loving your connection to the sound of it.
Mm-hmm.
Raw.
Yeah.
That's so neat. I didn't expect that. Coming to talk to you about your very physical texture that you work with. That you'd be talking about the sound of raw.
Well, we were talking about voices, and I listen not to music, but I listen to very specific voice, usually online. It used to be on the radio for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to a lot of art historians and writers speaking to their work.
Mm-hmm.
I just need something to engage my mind. I'll also listen to things about philosophy, neuroscience.
Right.
You know, it's heady stuff.
Right.
For some reason, that's what kind of other people, it might be rock music or what have you. And the voices of people are so significant. Like Tracy Emin, the eminent modern artist, the contemporary artist, British artist, the most beautiful voice. And talk about raw. Could you get more raw? I don't know if you are familiar with her work. You get more raw than Tracy Emin as a human being, her story and history and her work. And her voice is so beautiful and melodious. And I heard a podcast with her and Frances Morris, who used to be the director of Tate Modern, and they were talking about Louise Bourgeois. All three of these women are icons to me. And I was so struck, and that made me want to delve into Tracy Emin's work and story even more. I mean, and then there are others where I had to kind of get past the voice because I loved what they were doing. I loved what they were saying, but they had that voice fry we were talking about, and et cetera. So I realized you can get past that.
Mm-hmm.
But, and we spoke the last time we got together,
mm-hmm,
about how magnificent your voice is.
Oh, thank you.
How melodious and beautiful. So I'm so thrilled that you're delving deeper into sound.
Mm, thank you. You know, a musician said once to a friend of mine, make the sound you want to make.
Mm. It's like, see the change you want to, be the change you want to see.
Right. Right, make it.
Right.
And so
right.
I will say that the reason this feels very comfortable to me is that a lot of people say they don't like the sound of their voice.
Mm. And they don't like to see images of themselves, and they don't like to see themselves
right
in film. And
it kind of throws them to hear their voice. I'm very sensitive to sound.
Mm-hmm.
And when I listen to my voice on tape, it sounds good to me.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you. You're sounding like what you were trying to express.
Or even if it's not even, I will say it's not even that. It's that it literally is a sound that's easy on my ears.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, it's not that it's me speaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's that, oh, that's pleasant to me to listen to. It's like, it's actually like it's separate from me.
Is this something you're, are you trying to get a certain timbre in your voice? Like an actor might be projecting or trying to do something like that?
No, right now I'm in a very, very relaxed state, so my voice is lower.
Yeah.
But I actually have quite a range. I think this is going to sound considerably different than the one we did before.
Yeah.
Just because my energy is in a different space.
Do we not want to see Erica angry? Do we not want to hear Erica angry?
You don't want to hear
pissed
me angry.
Off.
I can say that I did a performance once, a play, in which I needed to get angry. And I am volcanic when I'm angry.
Yeah.
And one of the guys in the play said to me, he kind of pulled me inside and said, you know, no man is going to be able to handle that anger.
Too much Kali energy.
What's Kali?
The goddess of creation and destruction.
I don't know anything about Kali.
I don't know much more than that, but
where is she from?
I believe it's Indian,
yeah,
South Asian.
Sounds like it.
I believe.
Yes.
I want to say I believe because I.
Right. So it's funny that you would ask that about anger.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a lot of it. I'm.
Yeah.
I relate to the Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And really comfortable with everyone knowing that, so they avoid
unlocking it,
releasing it.
Well, your voice is so gentle that which I have heard, so that's fascinating. You know, whatever you see, you're probably going to also see the opposite at some point. You know, or it's there.
Yeah, the opposite is there. It's definitely there. So, back to texture.
Okay.
And you just made these pieces that are hanging on the wall right now.
Right. In the last, I believe it's been, I can't remember, it was the end of 2024 or the beginning of 2025. Somebody came in, a filmmaker, a lovely filmmaker named Valentina, who has done a beautiful film about the architect Schindler and we connected. She came over to the studio. She saw these and immediately told me I needed to go to this place in Santa Monica where these astonishing trees, which she felt were evoked by these. Mm-hmm. We eventually did go there, and I was astonished. I took a lot of pictures, and when I just unplanned put them next to images of these, you could almost not tell which is which. She told me to, she suggested that I do one vertically. So I just craved the process of gluing down this cord. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, the repetition, the kind of on and onness of it. Mm-hmm. And so I did that one. And I recently had someone in who felt they were decorative, which I was just fascinated by because, you know, now craft, decorative, design, art, fine art, conceptual art, they're all intermingling. Mm-hmm. And I know that our friend Carrie Burkle would probably have a lot to say about that, the director of Textile Arts LA, the originator and director of Textile Arts LA. But, you know, when I came up, decorative was like a really bad word. And then I had a business for 15 years within decorative painting. I was in San Francisco, long story short, and did murals, color consultation, wall finishes, furniture painting, and I really loved it. And it was, again, this layering and layering and layering of texture. So it was interesting. Made me think about what all of that means again. I'm not sure I care. I just need to make.
You just need to make.
Yes.
Right.
It's a craving. It's a raw craving,
it's
Erica.
It's a raw craving. That's great. So it also looks very meditative because you're laying down string, rope, one right next to another. And they're very fine.
A lot of them are fine. I use a lot of what I have for a number of reasons. It stimulates creativity. It's also a little easier on the environment. So I try to do that. I try to take what I have and reimagine it, reinvent it. But yes, I had, I couldn't let vocal fry come in there. I had a lot of fine, a cord, thin cord, and I had done this piece here, the No Safe Place, and with the three hung textile pieces that form a piece you can enter, and actually I'm making a roof for it here, but I had done a lot of that, and it had been an incredible experience to lay down this very fine cord and see what it created as it the areas grew and grew, you know, and I knew from decorative painting and doing gilding where you work with these small pieces of leaf and might cover a whole wall with them. I mean, you do have to love it.
Right.
I also have painted and done a lot with big brush strokes, so kind of sometimes confusingly or overwhelmingly for me, I love all of it. But this is sort of what I'm super engaged with right now. And I think at that time, I just also really needed to calm down. I needed to streamline my energy. So I thought I'm going to do a series of small book forms, and I'm simply going to do them in all these different shades of white. I also did one in black. And I simply wasn't able to make them samplers. I don't know if you've ever seen the beautiful Japanese pattern sample books, which are just magnificent. And they're all these different, they're just magnificent. I've never seen them in the flesh, I've only seen images. But I was thinking about those, and I thought, well, I'm going to do a page of bows, and I'm going to do a page of knots. And I simply couldn't do it. I had to make them sort of finished artworks. So that's when I decided after that, and they were a lot, we can look at them shortly, but they were a lot of, and it was a much smaller scale of just, you know, how do you read a page, quote unquote, of simply tone on tone texture.
Right.
What does that read as? It's not
so
words.
Good. It's so exciting.
So then I, you know, I thought, what would it be like to, and again, I had these strips of canvas. And it was a very, very, very different experience. It, you know, it became much more with shapes within. I wanted to retain the original shape of the canvas because I'm also very interested in, like you're saying about the raw footage and the pure podcast, what happens when you, you know, you just work with what's there.
Right.
You're controlling it within
your resources.
Right. Within your, and we kind of do that with our lives. We have these lives.
Right.
We have these parents. We have these things we come out of. And then what do we do within those lines? We can't really change those lines.
Right.
You can't really blow them up. People have tried. It doesn't work. And you have to weave within it.
Right.
So, and then Valentina came over and she kind of really challenged me to do one horizontally. Yes. And that was several months ago. I think it was before the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, what would it be like to do one horizontally? And it was more horizontal. And so I started this in the midst of all these other works in progress.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel differently. I'm not really sure where or how to go. I also had that studio visit where the person was using the word decorative. And a person from even an earlier time than myself. So much more, I think, perhaps in that mode of fine. She also used the word fine art, which is something that I don't, maybe I just don't hear it, but I don't hear people really using it.
Are you saying she was referring to your work as fine art?
She was saying, she was using the word craft and the word decorative and saying I needed to kind of determine sort of where I was going to be.
I see.
So
choose a lane.
Yeah, I think I'm like, no. But she also said really, you know, I think it's always great to, unless you know, unless you really think someone's just being destructive or,
right.
You know, that most people have a lot of useful things to say. And then, you know, you're left with having to determine, you know, what you're going to do with that.
Right. So I just, let's just go to the fine art versus craft for a moment. Because to me now, it feels like there's a real blend.
Oh, there's a blend. There's also like the decorative arts and there's the arts and crafts movement,
right?
Which is not even, you know, recent,
right?
There's the decorative pattern and decoration, which are a lot of people that are very much entrenched or you know have a role or a place in the quote unquote fine arts world. You know, it was another really interesting thing about this person is they just couldn't stand seeing one more thing with strings hanging. So,
that's interesting.
The
easy answer there is that person has a very specific kind of art that he or she is comfortable with, and that's just that.
Well, one thing I have so learned, Erica, that I've learned but I have an awfully hard time retaining is that a lot of times you can't necessarily make a definitive judgment on another person in terms of what they're presenting and what they're doing. Many encounters, when I think back on them and I had an initial knee-jerk reaction, could be in the positive range, could be in the negative range. You know, those are very broad. Boy, there's a lot more that unfolds over time. And there's a lot more things that happen often with people over time. So with in my higher elevation, I can stay with that. In my lower evolution, I want to make a snap judgment.
Right.
So I don't know. You need to put it in the hopper and sort of keep going. And, you know, one thing I was going to share with you is that perhaps is a little different than when we came together last time, which I think was maybe a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
I have never had so much work that was in progress going on.
Hmm.
This is in progress. That is in progress. I have a couple of pieces that have been here a long time that are relating to being female that that are in progress. I have a whole series of four pieces called Six Stages of Knowing that are in progress. I don't know what that's really about. I have about 10 ideas I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be becoming looser as far as, you know, I go after something, I have an idea, I finish it, I move on to the next piece. There are piles of sort of color-coded materials all over the place that I don't want to uncouple from each other, but I'm not sure quite where they're going to go. I have four books that I want to bury for a series called Dirty Books, Let Nature Have Their Way With Me. And, you know, it's, will I even live long enough to do all of this? I hope so.
Well, that's exciting. It's like a like a fountain, your fountain, all of these ideas coming out.
I also love, you know, I love the action of doing something. And you have to decide what you're going to do that. And you have to actually, you know, do it, which right. I'm so used to doing. And then I would get to a certain point and I didn't know, like, is this a sample? Is it going to be a finished thing? I have a writing practice in the morning where I explore these things. And mm-hmm. It's much easier to explore them when I'm not here. Isn't that bizarre?
That is interesting.
Because when I'm here, it's so physical. I need to do. I can't really contemplate without actually having my hands in it.
Yeah, that's interesting. The frequency here is physical touch, doing.
Right.
And all of your, I'm imagining it just triggers, if you will, that I need to be touching this and working with it.
There's a craving.
Yeah.
You know, craving. Like a yearning, a craving, a need to, you know, so maybe that's what those are about. I mean, maybe it's just someone needing to, but I have had some, you know, when Valentina came back and I said, well, I did what you said. And she liked it. I mean, she's a visual person in terms of being a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
She's not a maker of, you know, but she has it was so fascinating seeing those trees. I'll send you a few of the pictures.
Are they eucalyptus?
They are not. They're ancient trees and they're beyond San Vicente on a street that would have been 23rd or 19th maybe.
Uh-huh.
On the other side of San Vicente, if you ever find yourself there.
Yeah.
And there's also some, she was very familiar with the area because they have, like, Paul Williams, the architect, has a house there.
Mm-hmm.
And other famous architects have houses there. You know, it's not my forte, so I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I could probably re-find the Paul Williams. And then these extraordinary trees that I've, and there's one with hands. I mean, it's, so she made another visit. She threw me into her classic car, and we went over there. It was a real adventure, like with you.
Thank you. And so seeing the trees inspired these vertical pieces.
No, I had done these. She came in and saw them.
I see, and they reminded her.
Yeah, I was going to work. I had a lot of that earthy cord
mm-hmm.
material.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it was begging to be used. So I, you know, instead of working in the black and the white, I kind of went into the earth tone, which is a step away from the white, but still sort of in that realm. And those whorls are, you know, I needed to cut them into some kind of form. So those whorls are the extra canvas.
Uh-huh.
And that is also working from Eva Hess, she took things that she'd done and she turned them into other things.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then
it's so effective.
When I was working with it, I was laying down glue and then I was laying down the strip of all these cords. And I did it and did it and did it. And then all of a sudden I thought, wow. Look at the cascading, like, waterfall of these cords.
Yeah.
I want that. I want to leave that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I left it, and then I just worked up to that.
Oh, it's such a great effect.
You know, all of these things, Erica, could go, I could go completely wild, and I have some sort of weird inner thing that says, you know, don't do that, just do that. I mean, you could take this idea, you could, you know, and I did, this is number 1, 2, 3. I did engage that in the other pieces, but only in certain areas. It's sort of like working on instinct.
Right. What if you didn't say, if there wasn't a part of you saying, just keep it here, just this, what would going wild look like?
Oh, I could have put them here. I could have made the whole thing bigger. I could have had them down here. To me, if I did a lot of it, it would lose its power.
Right, right. It's true.
You know, if you were with 100 other women with exactly your hair, which is magnificent, you can't see it on the podcast. It looks like it could go right into my work, but don't worry. if you were with 100, which my husband's an actor, he would go to, you know, when he used to go, actually go to casting, you would see all these people kind of with certain characteristics the same, because that was called for. It would be a magnificent sight, but you might lose for a moment you.
Sure.
Because there'd be so much of that.
Right.
So,
right. So, yeah. Knowing to stop, knowing to say that's enough.
It's not a hardcore or like a hard stop knowing. It's just a feeling out. It's just a feeling out.
Yeah, the feeling.
And that same interesting person who was talking about the decorative, when she looked at the pieces with the text, which was, you know, this one hanging, and we weren't really talking about those, but this new series about knowing. And she says something like, well, all the text is the same. It's the same size. And there's the same, I mean, I've worked in decorative painting. I know what it is to enlarge a font, to make something different. With what I was doing with those, it would have taken the power away. I wanted the font, I wanted the text to be exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and I did work with the color, so that you would have to see it as an entity, and you'd have to read it, and you'd have to see the difference in what it meant from the words, not sort of telegraphing it from having knowing being huge or I being tiny or what have you.
Right. I can feel how it just draws you in. It's not about the font. It's about the words.
And the feeling of what, you know, if you look at something repeated or you look at a color, you're going to get a visceral, a sensory, or even an energetic response. And the same thing, I think, with looking at words, especially words that are not, I mean, if you read a book or you read a text, long text, you know, you often are not going to be really thinking about the individual words. You're going to be carried away by the story, what they're trying to say. If you just have this string of text and you have words like knowing, wishing, and there are very few words there, you're kind of compelled to engage with it. You know, what does it feel like when you say or hear the word knowing? What does that mean?
I love that.
I don't know.
I love that you're that sensitive to the sound of the word. Again,
you hear the sound whether or not it's spoken out loud. You know, because if you're reading poetry or you're reading a name, I think you're hearing it. You're hearing it in a way within. You're hearing it through your own voice. Or whatever associations. And I think probably one, like sort of some physical level, or people who study the physiological or whatever all that is, you know, the kind of nexus of the psychological, the physiological, it's probably quite complex what the brain is doing. But we are really responding to all of that on, I think, an unconscious level. And I think it is, you know, you've come into the studio, you're responding, I'm responding to you. If you were to speak in a different way, I would almost be a different person responding to you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes. I really know what you mean.
It's so powerful.
It is so powerful. Like you said, you walk in here and you have to be touching things. You leave it, and now you can think about, you can write in the morning in that space.
Right.
I think about that all the time, how our immediate context influences how we think,
right,
the thoughts that come into our mind, the words we have at our disposal. I thought, room to room, I have a different vocabulary.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
And how you behave. I mean, this could have huge ramifications, you know, in terms of, you know, you're going to act a certain way.
Right.
Perhaps.
Right. Like now, I'm holding this. Let's walk back. But I'm aware that I'm holding this microphone.
Yes.
That has to be affecting this conversation.
But much less than if you were behaving differently, I think. I'm almost forgetting that it's there. You know, I heard, I think it was two writers in conversation. Yes. Lauren Elkin, who lived a long time in France, now lives in London. And someone else who had lived in New York and was English, and they talked about really feeling like they were a different person in different environments,
mm-hmm.
and even feeling more who they felt they truly were. And you know that happens with people too. You know, there are people, they just don't let you be you, and it's not even anything they're saying or doing. It's just
exactly.
this vibe, and,
exactly.
and they're, you know, no, you have to be
this
what
is
I
why
need
people
you to be.
Have to be outside of their original family. Because
often, yes.
Often, right? Because you kind of can't help but be
right.
child
right.
with your parents.
Right.
Yeah,
the role
that's
you're cast into.
Exactly. And it takes a lot to get out of that.
It takes a lot.
It takes a lot.
It's like a cocoon that you're kind of...
Right. What this conversation you had, you heard with these two women talking about
mm-hmm.
that, what was that? Was it a podcast?
Yes, yes, and I can send it to you. I'm really interested in the work writing of Lauren Elkin, and you will really, really get this. She has an amazing voice and vocal style.
Mm-hmm.
She self-described herself as, I believe, having ADD,
mm-hmm.
but she's an amazing writer. But I love listening to her speak. Like I was talking about Tracy, Tracy Emin. And once I heard them speak, you know, my view of their work is affected by that. And then she spoke, it was an event from, believe it or not, Prada. And the word Miu Miu, which is, I guess, a line, a style was in there. And a woman who was a journalist, and she was magnificent also. She was interviewing Lauren Elkin, and then a number of people were going to be talking about Simone de Beauvoir. Because Lauren Elkin had translated, she was one of two people who very recently translated a book, one of Simone de Beauvoir's very, very early books, I believe it was called Zaza, or it was about a beloved friend of hers from her youth, and Lauren Elkin had translated it, and someone else as well for a different market. And there was going to be a panel, which I also listened to because I'm intrigued with Simone de Beauvoir. And there was a fascinating panel where a number of people were talking about Simone de Beauvoir and this book from different viewpoints. They were different writers, but there was also this half an hour interview just with Lauren, and that's when she and she's a well-known entity, this person. I believe she's a writer, she's English, but had lived in New York and loved New York, felt like she was, I'm paraphrasing. If anybody should ever hear this, I want it to be known, I'm paraphrasing. But if you, I will send you the link, but you can Google Lauren Elkin, comma, video or talk,
okay.
and you'll come up with this because it was fairly recent.
Okay. And she said when she was in New York, she was more herself?
The other woman, and Lauren Elkin left France, left Paris reluctantly because of her partner's work, which was in London, not too shabby either.
Right.
But love just you know, worked very hard to establish herself in Paris, and it was there for 20 years, and of course goes back frequently. Mm-hmm. It's not that hard when you live in London. You know, I can't give you an exact quote.
That's okay.
But if you could listen to it in the ride home.
Sure.
But spoke to, yes, they spoke to this phenomena.
Right.
And, you know, I don't think it has to be necessarily a geographical place. I mean, I know I go places.
Exactly.
One opening, I feel so myself and yes. alive. Another, I feel shut down.
Right.
Maybe even resentful or what have you. Right. And with people.
Right. Right.
So,
I wonder if that is, I was going to say, is that a result of being mature? But then I think, I don't know, as a child, I always kept a little isolated from
right.
the group.
Right.
So
right.
it's probably.
Do you have that?
It may also be an artistic
for yourself. Yeah.
Need. But actually, what I'm more interested in is what you're talking about, is mm-hmm. that just in general, and I guess the question would be, is this for everyone, that they feel like their place, their literal environment, is eliciting a part of themselves that isn't,
right.
that's different from that environment over there.
Or they feel that way. They
feel that way, and they actually kind of manifest in that mm-hmm. way. I think of President Obama mm-hmm. saying that Michelle is the only person he knows that is the same person wherever she is, whatever room she's in, whoever she's talking to.
Is that a presentation too? Is she the same person intimately with him?
That's a great
Someone
question.
She really trusts.
That's a great question. Chances are he meant that. Yeah, she's pretty consistent.
I mean, she's not going to reveal in all these other environments things she's going to reveal to her partner.
Right.
But he's talking, I think, about the personality qualities. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you're lovely and generous except when you're with me. Or, you know, you're a person who... Does that mean someone's a fake?
No.
In certain places.
That's key.
Uh-huh.
That is key. Yes, you can be in a performative state.
Right.
But I don't think it is, it can be. I mean, someone can try to manipulate a
right.
situation
right.
and put on an act. But I'm not really interested in that part.
Right, right, right.
I'm interested in the organic,
yeah.
the raw
right.
state
pure,
of a human.
Pure.
The pure human that is very affected by their environments
right.
and what comes out of them. And this idea of multiple personalities.
Right.
Sybil mm-hmm. had such an effect on me when I read it as a teenager. Mm. I was fascinating that one personality didn't remember the other personality.
Mm.
So that's a very extreme
yeah.
state. But
And induced by trauma, correct?
Truly.
Right.
Truly. Horrifying story.
Yeah.
But
it's a
maybe
true story, right?
It is a true right. story. 16 personalities that didn't know of each other.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Protective.
Protective. Protective. So that's very possible, too, that it is protective
yes.
for us to
yes.
adjust to
yes.
what our environment
yes.
is. That's clear. But again, I think we're talking about something deeper
mm-hmm.
that's not protective. But it's just, this environment lets me breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Why did my shoulders drop here?
Yes.
Why am I so comfortable?
And
Whereas,
I think
yeah.
one of the most glorious moments we can have is when we have many different worlds in a moment
mm-hmm.
and we feel just really ourselves right in that nexus.
So that all of ourselves are combined in that moment,
or
all at once?
You know, you feel, you know, people from your family or your family of origin or your partner are there, people from your professional life are there, and you don't feel like you just, it's just coming together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually, you know, it doesn't last forever because, you know, a lot of the times, I think you're really right about the protection, you know, the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Pressure to present.
Mm-hmm. Perform.
And we live in a very performative area. I mean, we live in the nexus of the film industry and, right. you know, all of these in the art world also. You know, the art making and art community,
mm-hmm.
the art world mm-hmm. and the art market, I think, are four different things.
Art world versus community and market and...
Making.
And the making. Yeah, that's
I mean, we're a community. Right, we're a community right now.
Right.
But I'm not making.
That's right.
But they're close because you're so sympathetic.
Right.
In sympathy, in the French mm-hmm. way, you know, mm-hmm. sympathique.
Mm-hmm.
Our community is very different. It can mean so many things. It's very different than the art market.
Right. It's completely different.
So you that's one thing that.
But it feels like art world feels like an umbrella. Are you experiencing that as different as well?
No, it is. It is. It. I think the art world is an umbrella because you know the art market engages the art world, of course.
Right.
The art world could be seen as community. It could be seen as levels of status and privilege and hierarchy. It could be seen as what we're doing right now,
mm-hmm.
being together.
Communing.
Yeah, communing. And I do a lot of thinking communing while I'm alone in my studio working. I heard another just fascinating interview with an artist that I had not been aware of, Anne Rothenstein.
Mm-hmm.
She's an artist in her 70s, based in London, was married until fairly recently to the British film director Stephen Frears, who I had heard of and admired the films of. She was on what's called the... Talk art or the art something or other. I could find it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has one of my husband and I favorite actors, Russell Tovey, and another friend or colleague of his, and the interview artists, because I guess they're collectors, they're very interested. Anyway, she was on, and I must have gotten wind of that because someone else that I loved was on. And I was wondering, oh, are they going to be very glib? What's it going to be like? It was so fascinating because she came from like an arts colony in England where everybody was a visual artist. And she went into acting, which she didn't train for. She said, I've never trained for anything I've done. And she went into writing, which she still does. And then when her children were born, she started to paint. I guess she had maybe painted earlier. And she's so basically considered self-taught and is really having a moment right now. But she talked about, she has like four friends, one really close friend. She talked about not really being in an art community because, and let me tell you, I love art community, but I have to guard my making time. So I've limited time to be able to do that. And she said, you know, she doesn't really have it. She wants to work. And you can draw your own conclusions. I'll share that link with you as well. But it was really, really interesting.
She wants to work, and for her, having community would be taking away from, like you, making time.
Well, I wouldn't want to. I do have community. I love being here. I should say I'm embedded in the 18th Street Art Center community. I'm a devoted local artist. I love being here. And when I've been asked about this before, I say it's heaven and perfection for me because you have your own private space embedded in community
mm-hmm.
with great, all kinds of events. In fact, there's a wine tasting at 3:30 if you want to stick around. that might help the interview, who knows? You know, and my life would be completely different if I was just in a refurbished garage somewhere or working at home, which I've done before. So no, it was just, it was very freeing listening to her
mm-hmm.
doing it her own way.
Mm-hmm.
And,
liberating.
Very liberating in terms of, you know, feeling like you could have your feelings.
Yeah.
You could have your feelings of needing to be just in your studio alone working, and you know, because the reality in Los Angeles is there's just too much of any one thing to ever do in 1,000 lifetimes.
Right.
You're only one body
right.
We haven't really learned how to trip start the time-space continuum to be more one place.
Close.
Right. And it's not only just getting there. It's like you don't just go there and go in and out. I mean, you have to give of yourself.
Right.
So there's more people I want to support. There's more places I want to go than I can ever do. That's one of the great challenges, I feel, in being here. Now, if you were out in the Arctic or Arkansas, or not to put any of those places down.
Somewhere
you were
rural.
Just, you know, or some place where you were just alone in a magnificent, huge studio all the time and all the space to work in, but you...
Right.
You didn't have that structure. You'd be struggling with something else.
Right. Yeah. Well, everything that's happening here falls under distraction.
It's something that has magnificent enrichment to engage with, but
right.
You have to make the decisions. I find that very challenging.
Right.
Because there's people you want to support. There's people you want to see. There, you know, there's the quote-unquote blue-chip galleries that have these magnificent things that would be super inspiring and educational to see. There's that community on so many different levels.
Right.
There's people that are just such wonderful people, and you want to be there 40 miles away for their opening from 5
right.
to 7, but you just can't be, you know.
I think this is where being there in spirit comes in.
Yeah, I do a lot online to support people.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's one of the ways.
Deborah, let's let it stop there right
okay.
now.
Okay.
You are a great guest.
It was easy peasy with you.
Thank you.